So when something flies at our face, we flinch first, we feel fear second, and then we might think through what we need to do. Some people immediately think about what else is coming at me. Animals aren't going to do that. The biggest part of our brain, that's where human thinking and upper level executive function, planning, processing your thoughts, doing all of the things that only humans can do. When we're feeling fear or feeling unconnected, we can't access the most human best thinking parts of our brain. We can control the part. You do have the power.
This episode of the Healthy Parenting Handbook is about stress. It's an older recording back from when I was in the middle of being certified as a stress mastery educator through the American Institute of Stress. I introduced that way back when by saying, you know, I'm also a mom of four, so I am a master in stress because they're not dead yet. So let's listen to, 5 years ago, Katie, talking about our brain, our breath, and how we can actually control our stress.
It's so fascinating if you're a science geek like me, but also so incredibly practical. Like, the empowerment I feel with the knowledge I'm going to share with you today has been literally life-changing in my household in the last month. And I'm not even very good at it. When I get good at it, it's going to be absolutely amazing. So today we're going to talk about how stress affects the brain and how your brain is actually built, how that brain and stress affect your body, and then the best news, how you can actually take control of your reaction to stress. I will tell you, I'm not going to tell you to cut things out of your life. I'm not going to tell you to have a shorter to-do list or to do less for your children, because that's not always practical. When people talk about stress management, they kind of tend to teach us to deal with the external stressors and reduce them. Not always possible. What's beautiful is that we can be in control of the way we react, or better yet, the way we respond to those external stressful situations. So I want to teach you first about what's called the triune brain and how the brain is organized. So we experience the world and our brain interprets that for us from the bottom up, like literally in the brain. So at the base of your brain is what some people call the lizard brain, or the sensing part of your brain. And within a fifth of a second, I think I got that right, within a fifth of a second of experiencing something, the lizard part of your brain is in action. Okay, so when you say sensing, it's like almost, it's your automatic reactions in your body. So let's take one situation where maybe something flies at your face, right? What is the first thing you do? You blink. You don't think, then blink. You don't think, then flinch. You flinch first, right? So that's like the sensing. It's that very immediate physical in your body reaction. Your breathing rate might increase. Your heart rate might increase, okay, when you feel a little bit stressed. And that's called the lizard brain because it's like kind of equivalent to how a reptile, right, or an amphibian would experience the world. Reptiles and amphibians don't have the cognition that humans have. They're just sensing the world and reacting. Okay, so that's our lizard part of the brain at the bottom. Once the experience goes through the lizard brain, it goes up into the middle part of the brain, which scientists sometimes call the monkey brain. Okay, we're not to our higher level thinking yet. We're in the middle. The monkey brain is that which feels emotion and forms connection with others. You know, monkeys are different than lizards and other kind of lower animals because they have tribes, they have communities, right? And they actually help one another out and almost like have that kind of love that we would call in a human soul, we can feel love. So once we're up into our middle brain, that's where we're seeking connection. That's where we're actually feeling an emotion. So let's take that same experience of something flying at your face. Again, you don't think first, you flinch first, and immediately, like within the first second still, so it's quick, within the first second, you feel, right? You like feel that fear, you feel an emotion that you could actually name and talk about, because just the flinch doesn't necessarily have an emotion tied to it. Does that make sense? So we're sensing first, we're feeling second, and then we get into the upper level cognition. So the top portion of our brain, which, you know, if you think of the brain is kind of shaped like this, it's the biggest part, and that makes sense. The biggest part of our brain, that's where human thinking and like upper level executive function, planning, processing your thoughts, setting goals, you know, just thinking, right? Doing all of the things that only humans can do. That's the human part of our brain. So when something flies at our face, we flinch first, we feel fear second, and then we might think through, you know, what we need to do. We might, with different personalities, do different things. We might think about how we can avoid it, the next thing coming at us, or we might, but that's the thing. Some people immediately think about what else is coming at me, right? Animals aren't going to do that. They're not going to predict. So that's all of our upper level stuff. Each part of our brain has a different basic need. So the bottom part of our brains, like the lizard brain that just senses and reacts, needs to feel safe. First and foremost, it needs to feel safe. This is super important because we experience everything from the bottom up. And if an experience can't really get through the bottom, we're not able to turn on our upper level thinking. What that means is if you don't feel safe in a situation, if you're chronically stressed and you never quite feel like life is settled or right, or if a child is in a situation, you know, a bad home where they don't feel safe, or someone being bullied and they don't feel safe at school, guess what? They get kind of stuck in lizard brain all the time. And they're not able to connect in their mid part of the brain, and they're certainly not able to do upper level thinking and learning. Is it any wonder that kids who are bullied or who are from very unstable home conditions are having trouble learning? It's because their brain is constantly beaconing out, am I safe? Am I safe? I don't think I'm safe. I don't think I'm safe. And their processing can't go any further. So first, in any situation, we have to tell our brains, you're safe. Second, we have to feel connected. We don't necessarily have to be with other people, but we have to at least know that we have people in our corner. Okay, research actually has shown that, you know, let's say introverts. Maybe I like to be alone in my room, but I have greater mental health if I know and feel that I have other people who love me and who will take care of me if I need them, than someone who likes to be by themselves, but they also feel isolated, that they don't really have anyone if they needed someone, that they don't really have people who love them in their life. Okay? So bottom part of the brain has to feel safe. Middle part of the brain has to feel connected and loved. And only then can we fully access the upper part of our brain where we can be logical, make good decisions, plan ahead, set goals, reach goals, learn in school, or, you know, I like learning too. Isn't that crazy? So if we think about being chronically stressed and always feeling like our to-do list is never done and always worrying about the world, oh my gosh, the water we drink has toxins in it and my kids are going to die. And oh my gosh, the air we breathe has toxins in it and my kids are going to get sick. And oh my goodness, what are we eating? Are we eating nourishing enough food? I don't want my kids to get sick. Like, these are my thoughts, actually. These are all well-meaning thoughts that a lot of us parents who really love their kids and want to raise healthy kids have. But if we're constantly mulling on those, we drag our own thinking out of cognition and into more of the lizard monkey brain where we're not as human. Isn't that crazy? It's so crazy and fascinating, but like super interesting. Okay. So again, we always want to, in that startling example, we flinch first, we feel the fear next, and then we can start to plan ahead. And so you can think of that same process for anything you're encountering in life. If I'm going to sit down to do a task at my computer, or I'm going to make dinner, if I'm feeling anxious and fearful, I'm not going to be able to do it as well. I'm not.
Did you know my oldest son, Paul, and four of his friends wrote a cookbook for kids a couple years ago? It is the first and so far the only real food cookbook written by kids for kids. And I have to give Chef Junior a huge shout out as today's podcast sponsor. This book is packed with 100 recipes that kids can make, and they're leveled from beginner to advanced, so your littlest kids and your teens can find so many delicious foods to love. Again, this is written by 5 kids. They put together this cookbook when they themselves were between the ages of 9 and 12, and it launched in 2020 when they were between the ages of 12 and 15. It is so inspiring for other kids to see what children do in the kitchen and what they have put together, and to read words written by actual peers of their own. You can learn more about the book Chef Junior and how our kids put it together, and also get some special bonus gifts just from our kid authors. go to kidscookrealfood.com/chefjr. That's kidscookrealfood.com/chefjr for all the fun bonuses, background scoop, and ordering information.
If I'm going to sit down to do a task at my computer, or I'm going to make dinner, if I'm feeling anxious and fearful, I'm not going to be able to do it as well. I'm not. So the great news is that we can actually control that. And it's not controlling it from the top up, because sometimes you say, I don't want to be stressed. I think all the time, Katie, you're being an idiot. You're overblowing things. Don't do that. Well, you know what? That's not going to be quite as effective, because it's trying to use the upper part of your brain, your logic, when you're stuck in the lower part of your brain, right? So if we can speak to the lower parts of our brain and soothe them from the bottom up, we're probably going to be more successful at responding to stressful situations in a more healthy and effective way. Cool, right? So far, two big takeaways that I want you to remember. If you remember nothing else about lizards or monkeys or brains, remember this. First, when we're feeling fear or feeling unconnected, we can't access the most human, best thinking parts of our brain. And two, we can control the parts. You do have the power. Okay, and here's how. When your sensing part of your brain, that lizard brain, is activated by something fearful, your heart rate increases, your breathing rate increases. And guess what you're in charge of? Your breath. You're in charge of your breath. You don't think about it. You're always breathing without thinking, right? When you get a little stressed, sometimes we stop breathing and we go, oh man, I just didn't even notice I was holding my breath, right? Sometimes we breathe quicker. But our brains are big enough that even when we're feeling stress, especially with practice, we can actually breathe slower. And if we slow down our breathing to the most appropriate rate, it will slow down our heart rate and it will tell our brain, you're safe. Cool, right? I love it. So the best, most effective human rate of breath is about 5 seconds in and 5 seconds out. Okay, so I'm going to count this for you just to show you. It's for most people, it's a little bit long. And if you are really stressed and you want to better activate what's called the parasympathetic state, or kind of the resting state of our nervous system instead of the anxious, like put on the gas, got to do lots of stuff state, you can exhale a little bit longer. Exhale 6 or 7 seconds. Okay, so first, just for me, do this with me. Start by pushing out all your breath, exhaling until your lungs are nice and empty, and then inhale 1, 2, 3, 4. Keep inhaling. 5, your lungs should be full. Now exhale slowly. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's long, right? 5. If you can do 6, go 6. Now, once may not have a huge effect, but if you can continue doing that while I'm talking, and by the way, try to at least inhale through your nose if you have a cold. I know, that's really hard. Try to inhale through your nose. You can exhale nose or mouth. If you do that about 3 times, you can actually start to feel in your body a less stressful response, a more relaxed state. Super fascinating. So not only are we in control, but it's actually that simple. It's actually as simple as counting to 5 and controlling our breath. It's easier with practice. Okay, so we're going to talk about that in just a second, but it's definitely easier with practice. We see when we look at the human body, the way God created the human body, that most things are in oscillation, meaning they go up and down, right? We wake, we sleep, we eat, we stop eating, we eat some more, stop eating. We think about if you ever are, you know, in the hospital and you see like the heart rate monitor, it's all up and down. The same with breathing is in and out. Brain waves oscillate up and down. Everything oscillates, but we Americans sometimes try to live like this, vroom, and that's a flat line. That a flat line is not good for us. So it's really important to have some period of activity and then take a little break, even if it's 60 seconds or 5 minutes. I know we're busy. A period of activity and then a little break. So my challenge for you, we're going to do a 7-day challenge, okay? And we're going to, what did I decide to call this challenge? I got to look it up. 7-day moment to breathe, because I want you to get really good at that breathing. I want you to get really good at 5 in and 5 or 6 out, okay? So that you can access that ability when you need it, when you're stressed, right? Don't try to practice this when you're like having a meltdown. Practice it all the time use it when you're about to have, you know, a mommy meltdown. None of you, I'm sure, do that. You've never thrown an adult temper tantrum. I also never threw an adult temper tantrum, especially not Saturday or last Thursday. Right. 7 days. For the next 7 days, I'm going to challenge you to commit to just taking at least one moment throughout the day and practicing those breaths, at least 5 breaths. If you can do it for 2 minutes, great. Okay. And I do want you to start by committing to someone else. Okay. Research shows that if we write things down and if we commit to other people, we're more likely to achieve it. So use the comments here. Commit if you're going to take the 7-day moment to breathe challenge. Tell your kids, tell your spouse, tell your friends. Just say, you know what? I'm trying to do this weird thing. It's just 7 days. So whatever day you're watching this on, put some maybe notes in your calendar. Like, I'm doing this challenge, right? Our poor brains, they're so full, right? So full. They need reminders. So here are a couple tips for ways to remind yourself to actually, you know, do the challenge, because you got to do it 7 times. It's a 7-day challenge. You might be able to set a reminder on your phone for a particularly normally stressful time of your day, or maybe just your least stressful time, so that you can practice this for 7 days. As long as reminders on your phone, like, don't stress you out, right? You might be able to connect and that normal activity that you do in your mind with this breathing challenge. So it's like a cue. Maybe you would connect it with something you always do. Like, every time I get my first cup of coffee in the morning, I'm going to do this thing. Every time I'm wiping down the kitchen counters or folding laundry, something you normally do every day. Or you could set a reminder in a place you see every day. You could put like a little post-it on your laptop screen or above your kitchen sink, somewhere on your bathroom mirror, somewhere you'll see it for the next 7 days. Or you could use a funny cue, right? You could get one of your kids' little stuffed animals and put it on your nightstand, or put it by the kitchen sink, somewhere where it will surprise you and you'll go, oh, I'm supposed to do the breathing thing. Okay, so 7 days, moment to breathe challenge. I guarantee this will change something about your life in a good way, and you'll get better at it. It's like a muscle, so practicing actually helps, right? So our stressful responses don't have to have anything to do with what happens outside of us. We actually can control them from the inside, and the most important thing we can do is to practice our slow, appropriate breaths to calm down our lizard part of our brain. Okay. Now, obviously, connecting with people, loving others, being with people is good too, but that's not part of the challenge. It's just kind of cool. It's kind of cool to know that, like, literally when you go out to hang out with your girlfriends or you have a men's night or whatever, it is actually good for your mental and physical health. Well, that's awesome. I know we want to talk about parenting. First of all, you will be a better parent if you can better respond to stress, because kids like to push your buttons. If you have kids, you know that. But also, we can teach this to our kids because we want them to be able to better respond to stressful situations. So with our kids, I know that the exhale is most important. So you don't just want to tell kids, like, just breathe, but you want to breathe with them, hug them close, let them feel your chest go in and out. And then again, with our little one, we say, blow out the candle, honey, try hard. And we say, oh, it came back on. Take a breath and try to blow it out again. And our little guy's 4, and he might be really worked up. And so he's like, you know, and he's just like shaking. But after a couple times, it does really work. It really kicks in that parasympathetic system. So it's awesome, super easy, blow out the candle. Sometimes my kid is too worked up and he goes, I can't blow it out. And I'm like, okay, just try, you know. But again, this is a very easy strategy you can teach your kids and help practice with them too.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy Parenting Handbook podcast. I hope your brain feels fed and your heart feels full and that you feel connected, knowing that there are other parents on this journey with you. We're just trying to raise healthy, independent adults. And you know, the next time you think, man, there is no handbook for this job, now there is the Healthy Parenting Handbook. Look up the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please leave a review, my friends, as that helps other parents who need this information to find us. And of course, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. That's a huge help. You can also look for our shorts as a reel on Instagram at Katie Kimball Kids Cook, or subscribe to the Healthy Parenting Handbook Shorts channel on YouTube. You'll get those bite-sized portions of healthy parenting advice.